crawl out from under your bridges, because it's time for Trollin' the Mitten. Your favorite local comedy podcast where we bring you the best and brightest from the Great Lakes State. I'm your host, Errol Gribble, a Michigan Reconnect student here at Lansing Community College in the Digital Media, Audio, and Cinema program, where, just like in nature, stars are forged through exposure to pressure and a lot of hot air. Welcome back to the show. It's everybody's favorite Michigan podcast. And I am your host, Errol Gribble. Today is our cherry episode. If you're not from Michigan, you don't know. I don't know why. I suppose we should have done some research before this episode. But cherries are huge in Michigan. No, I do know why. It's because of the climate is, of course, perfect for it, as long as global warming doesn't ruin everything. So in this episode, I once again roped an incredibly talented friend of mine, Miss Caitlin Bess Ryle. She is a performer, a teaching artist, singer, actress. She's so funny. She's so talented. And what I didn't know is her boyfriend, Mr. Austin Fainer, is also very funny. And she surprised me by having him with her when she showed up to record, and I was delighted. I'm so happy to have met him and to have him on the show. He's not a performer. At least that he hasn't told me he is. He should be. He is on the show. You'll notice if you look at the show notes, there's no social media for him because this gentleman does not want the attention, but I think we should give him all the attention he deserves. He plays Buck the boyfriend. That's the only spoiler I'll give you. Remember, nothing's rehearsed, everything's improvised. No planning, no practice, no problem. Enjoy the show. Hey, we're back Trolling the Mitten. Today we're up in Traverse City, Michigan, cherry capital of the world, at one of the best cherry farms in the area, if I do say so myself. We are here with Sherry of Sherry's Cherries. Sherry, say hello for the folks at home.
Well, hi, everyone.
How are you, Sherry? Thanks
I'm
for being here.
I'm doing great today. Thank you so much for coming out, Errol. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, we're so excited. We love everything Michigan. We love everybody Michigan. And believe it or not, we've yet to have any cherry specialists on the show, Sherry.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm honored.
Well, as am I. So how long have you been in the cherry game, Sherry?
I have been in the cherry game my whole life, Errol, because my whole life has been cherries. I was named after cherries. They thought that cherry was too cheesy, so my parents named me Sherry.
Sherry, cherry.
But the whole business was started about the time that I was born, and they named me after the farm. They thought it would be clever.
So Sherry's cherries.
Yes, that's my cherry.
So, I don't want to blast you out on the radio, but you don't look that old. What, early 30s maybe?
Yep, a ripe 30. That's me.
There we
but
go.
My parents started this farm, and they needed to rebrand a little bit about the time I came along. There had been maybe some controversy from my grandparents a minute ago, and they decided to rebrand and start fresh with new marketing and new things going on, and then I came along. They thought,
that's
perfect.
Beautiful.
Sherry's ready to handle it.
The little cherry baby.
The little cherry baby. That was me.
That's amazing. I gotta ask, though, what happened with your grandpa?
I'm not really sure what happened. I think he decided to get out of the game. It was starting to be a young man's cherry game. You had to
so he had to
be on top of branding and marketing, and you had to sell to the stores.
Sure.
It was different times back then. You could just open a stand on the side of the road and make pies in the local farmer's market competition, and then you were good, and you
absolutely
were in.
But sure.
It was a young man's cherry game, and so he decided to sell it to his daughter, which is my mother, Tammy.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So he had to get out of the cherry race.
All right. Well, I'm glad you're in it now. So how long have you been running the farm?
I've only been running it for like the last 5 years, Errol.
All right.
Yes, it's still kind of a new thing for me.
Sure.
But I'm very excited to take on this challenge and to grow our Sherry's Cherry brand and I'm going to try my best to make it national if I can.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hopefully the podcast can help What do we got here on your farm? You mentioned the cherry stand. I do see a cherry stand by the road.
Yes, we do keep that one up for our locals and sort of as a tribute to my grandfather.
Absolutely.
Just to keep the old ways alive. So we still have the stand.
And it's one of the fun things I think I love. You know, you could stop for blueberries and pick them. So could people do a you-pick cherries?
We do. We do a you-pick cherry during the cherry's ripest season.
All right.
We've gotten the most popular ones. So most of the trees that you're seeing throughout here are the Montmorency cherry brand, the varietal that is the tart cherries that we grow mostly in all of Michigan here.
Right, that's what Michigan's known for, right?
Yep, those are the ones.
We grow most of them all over. All right.
Yep. A couple of the other varietals that you're seeing out there, I'm trying to grow some that maybe aren't known in Traverse City.
Oh, it's a real trendsetter. Good for you. I'm really trying.
So one of the cool ones that we're trying out here, it's mostly a California-based one, is the Rainer cherry.
Okay.
So I'm trying. Those are the ones in the greenhouse. I'm telling you, I barely got to work hard to make those ones happen.
Oh,
but
that's
the ones
great.
That I cannot seem to get going out here is those gosh darn Bada Bing cherries.
Bada Bing?
Those Bada Bings.
Well, no, okay.
Forget about it.
I didn't know there was a cherry named Bada Bing cherry.
There is a Bada Bing cherry.
There's a Bing cherry, but the Bada Bing is different?
The Bada Bing is slightly different. It's actually really...
Does it have more of like a bite? You know, you taste it, it's actually quite sweet. Oh.
It is. So it's not too tart. It's very sweet. It's got
like
a darker skin.
Like the ladies at the Bada Bing. Okay.
That's right, Errol.
Darker skin.
Mm-hmm.
What do they say? The darker the berry, the sweeter the cherry, the darker the berry? I don't know.
They could say something like that.
Yeah,
I like my cherries how I like my coffee. Dark.
All right. Good to know, folks. What do your parents think of all of these new, you know, innovative ideas you're throwing at the family?
Well, my father's very supportive of it. He's very excited about it. He was new to the cherry game when he met my mother.
Okay, so he's grandpa to mom.
Yes,
yeah,
grandpa to mom. Okay, my father's very excited about all these changes, very proud. My mom's a little hesitant. She's a little bit on the side of my grandfather where all these new ideas and these new ways of doing things with that, you know, newfangled internet.
Sure.
It's not exactly something she's familiar with. So she's a little bit hesitant to the changes.
Bit of a boomer, is she?
A little bit, I tell you, Errol.
Okay.
But she is very excited about all the money it's bringing in.
That's what I was going to say, you know.
All the success. I don't hear her crying about that.
I think we think a lot about the folksiness of Michigan, but cherries is a big game.
It is. It is a big game.
There's big
it's
money
a big
to
cherry
be made
race,
in cherries.
I tell you. And that's part of the appeal of the cherry. Because it is such a big part of Michigan, and it's been around for so long, you got to lean into that folksy hominess of the cherry.
Sure. Meanwhile, you're raking in millions.
Listen, Errol, the taxes... Them taxes, I tell you, it's not quite millions. Maybe we'll be able to tip that in the next couple of years.
That's part of my five, ten-year plan. She's got a 5 to 10 year plan.
That's right.
To grow Sherry's cherries.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Why don't you give us a tour around the farm here?
Absolutely. So right over here, we've got the small production. I wouldn't say a factory, really. It's just kind of in our own little house, like our back mill area.
More of a pole barn area.
So we've got this little area over here. This is where we rake in all the cherries from, and we make sure they're organized. We make sure we got all the good cherries. So we don't take anything that looks a little bit deformed or a little bit maybe overripe or underripe.
And then we've
got the different areas to section those guys off into over here.
Yeah, look at that. You've got like people pulling them out by hand.
That's right, by hand. We are still a by hand production here, Errol.
Whoa.
I know. That's going to be something in the next five-year plan. I don't know what I'm going to do if I'm going to try to size it up for some national stuff.
You're going to need some relatively inexpensive labor, I think.
Something.
Maybe hiring some local high school kids or something.
Oh, absolutely. We are huge in the summertime. Oh, we are the coolest place to work in the summertime,
I tell you.
Uh-huh. We've got a nice big farm here.
Sure.
And so what we do is we hire some high school kids.
Yeah, it's a bunch of young kids.
That's right.
Do they all have, like, work permits? That kid looks, he can't be any older than 13.
Listen here, Errol. Something else we've got over here in our pole barn area is we've got a production area for preserves and jams and jellies.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Oh,
so we've got all of these things that, yeah, we cook it down right over here.
Wow. Yeah, look at them kids just stirring away those giant
I
rats.
Know. They're so excited to
hey guys,
work.
Hey, guys, how you doing? Do you pay those kids well? Or
yeah, we do. Of course we do, Errol.
I don't mean to call you out on the radio, but that kid looks like he's crying over there.
No, he's just gets so overwhelmed with how much he loves these cherries, Errol. Let me tell you.
Okay.
He just gets so excited to be a part of it.
Those are tears of joy.
Tears of joy for the cherries.
Have fun, buddy.
Cherries and the farming, it's just so exciting.
He keeps just like shaking his arms like they're tired. I don't know. Anyway.
Take a lap, Steven.
So this is exciting. I do smell the cherries cooking. Mm-hmm. So you got cherry jelly, cherry jam.
Yep, we got cherry jam, cherry jelly, cherry sauce, cherry syrup, cherry tart, cherry relish. We're already in Myers. We're finalizing a Kroger contract. We should be in Kroger's by the end of the year.
Okay.
This
is Sherry's cherry.
Sherry's cherries. Every cherry should be a little bite of paradise.
Sherry's cherry.
Sherry's cherry.
So what do you do that makes your cherries paradise bites?
Well, I can't give away all our trade secrets, Errol.
Of course, all right.
But let me tell you, the secret is in the nitrates in the soil.
Oh.
You got to start from the growth of the cherry.
The nitrates. Now, what is that? I'm not a farmer, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So tell me, what does that mean?
You know what? You know who helped me with this the most, Errol? That's going to be my boyfriend, Buck. He was actually, he's so smart, and he was the one that started me on this journey of how to have the perfect paradise cherry bite.
Buck. You know.
My boyfriend, Buck.
You say that, and mm-hmm. I see you looking across the orchard, and there's a strapping gentleman.
Hi, honey.
He's like shirtless and sweaty. Is that Buck?
That is my right. Buck.
Is it okay? I've got an extra microphone here. We could bring him over.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, I adore him.
Here, bring him on over. Hey, Buck.
Hey, honey. Can you come over here for a sec? Hi.
Buck, come on over.
Hi, baby.
Hey, here, yeah, just right into that microphone. Hey, buddy, how you doing?
Oh, I'm living the dream, dear Errol. How you doing?
Oh, good. So you are the infamous Buck.
Yes.
All right.
This is the one.
So Buck and Sherry, God, look at you. You're glowing. Sherry, you're pinker than a cherry. My goodness.
Yeah, he gets me all riled up that way.
Oh, okay. So PG podcast, kids.
Yes, Errol.
So Buck, how'd you two meet?
Oh, well, you know, I was in the area. I'm originally from Engadine.
Up in the UP? Mm-hmm. I thought I heard a little bit of that accent.
He's
in
a goat.
Yep.
That's okay.
So, and I've got
it's nice that you're slumming with the trolls down here. Good
that's actually why I was a little late to the farm today. I've got a beloved, I love her to death, a Polaris 700 Sportsman four-wheeler. That's my main form of transportation. And the clutch went out.
Sure. Oh, no.
And unfortunately, they don't carry clutches for that bad boy up at the Maelstrand Mall. So I had to come on down the bridge, hang out with the trolls for a minute. And I just happened to be walking through one of the outskirts of there, Traverse City, going to like the family farm and home to find a clutch for it.
Okay.
And I just happened to see that little red pickup over there unloading some dried cherries.
Oh, sure.
And I walked over, and there Sherry was, and I just fell in love with her on the spot.
Oh, love at first, Sherry.
It was. He was a little on the rough side. I mean, but that's how I like my men. Is a little outdoors, a little rugged.
I would say you're a rugged gentleman.
Well, you know, up in there, the UP, we don't have all these fancy malls and everything. I got to get all my clothes and everything really from the Dollar General.
That's
and
right.
And even that, we're just running to town. Takes probably 20, 30 minutes to go. Oh, a country mile?
No, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But worth it, you know. It looks like you found good pants. You're still looking for a shirt, apparently, but that's okay.
Well, I had to use my shirt that I had earlier, so again, because I was late. The clutch on the quad went out again, so I had to take my snowmobile. I don't own a car, because you only drive them 2 months out of the year up there.
Of course.
And unfortunately, riding the snowmobile across the bridge, there was a terrible, terrible swarm of them there, mayflies, and just splattered all over the shirt, so I had to take it off, and it was just... I couldn't put it back on.
Okay,
I couldn't let her see
so
me
not,
like
I
that.
I mean, you know, you can leave it off. You know, it's a fine look. It makes me wish this was a video podcast. Some of the ladies, I think, might enjoy it. No offense, Sherry. Mm-hmm.
No, none taken. They can all drink it in. I love Buck. I know what he's about, so they can drink it all in.
That is amazing. Now, are you working on the farm full-time now? Are you living together? Is this a full-time relationship? Or?
Well, we're not living together yet. Okay, we've got some plans to have me move down here. Probably within the next season or two.
Okay.
I've got a couple things up north I got to take care of there first. Now, I don't work on the farm full time, but I do the occasional odd job. I'm a jack of all trades. That's how I make my living, is a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Nothing feels more UP to me than the jack of all trades.
Yeah, because we don't have the industry up there that you guys have down here.
Buck, you've been helping out with the nitrates. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, nitrates is fertilizer, right? So, right? Like, that's where we get it from, like, the poop.
Yes.
So, Buck, how are you helping with the fertilizer? Do you have, like, a source up in the UP?
I do, actually. One of my odd jobs is I actually help maintain the Oswald Bear Ranch.
The Oswald Bear Ranch.
Up there in the UP.
Now, this is going to be some trade secrets right now, Errol, that he's given you. So, be careful, honey.
All right.
So, I dearly love the Oswald Bear Ranch. It's fun for the whole family.
Like a ranch of bears?
Yes. More of a sanctuary, really, for black bears.
Okay, that's a little nicer. So it's a free-range bear sanctuary.
So these are bears that have been injured in one way or another or abandoned, and then they were raised by humans for a certain amount of time, so they're not able to go back into the wild.
Oh, it's a bear rescue farm.
Yeah.
Okay, a ranch.
And as most sanctuaries do, they have indoor and outdoor enclosures for the bears because, you know, the weather up there can get pretty gnarly and need a place to hibernate. And for sanitary purposes, at the end of the season, at the end of the winter when the bears are coming out of hibernation, someone's got to go in there and clean out their caves.
Oh.
So
And Buck is the lucky one.
That's actually the secret ingredient for Sherry's cherries.
Folks, you heard it here on Trolling the Moon first.
Mm-hmm.
The sweetest cherries come from the meanest bear. Berries. I don't know.
I like that.
All right, I'm trying.
I like that.
So bear poop, bear dung, bear feces.
Yes, that's actually the
bear
secret.
Bear scat.
Skibidi bop bop. Poop in your pants. All right, that's great. Wow, bear scat. That's how you grow your cherries.
That is part of one of the secrets of Sherry's cherries.
Buck, how many bears you got up there on the farm, in the ranch?
Oh, I'm not sure because, it's the summertime. Bears come and they go. They go to different sanctuaries around the country, you know, because you gotta keep the population pretty steady.
Uh-huh.
Bears, while they're semi-social, they do like their alone time, so we don't have too many bears up there. I think right now we've probably got 25, 30 bears. We got several cubs that came in. Unfortunately, a mother was taken this last spring, got in an accident, splattered by an F-150.
Watch your trucks on the road, folks. Oof. Break for bears. But wow, you got quite a ranch up there then. A lot of bear poop. Sherry, now I see why you want to grow so big.
That's right.
With that much poop, why wouldn't you?
Exactly. We got excess scat.
Now, are you the one who's bringing that scat down?
Yes, that's actually really the only form of payment I receive from the Oswald Bear Ranch is I do get to clean out them cages and bring down the
you get
excrement.
Paid in scat.
Also, I just love the animals, you know, up there. It's just beautiful.
Oh, that's nice. What a big soul this boy's got.
He really is.
Big soul. Hopefully he's got a big everything. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, let's move on.
Hero.
You know what? I feel like we're kind of getting in the way here. I know you got a lot of customers rolling in.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that you want to show us before we leave?
I think next time, if we're able to do this again, I'd love to have a little bit more of an expansion ready at the Leelanau property, and then maybe you can get in on the ground floor of some of that new production that we're looking to have. But in the meantime, I do want us to head on over to the other side of the house where the bakery is, and I want to be able to sample one of them tarts.
Let's go. Let's walk on over there. Oh, Buck, you're gonna bring that whole bag of, what do they call that, bushel of cherries with you. All right.
Mm-hmm.
That's a strapping young fella.
You know, I can't just leave her out there in the orchard. She'll...
Sure. So while we're walking, what's the best way to pick those cherries?
I really find that just getting up there on the ladder, getting them down by hand.
Wow.
Because, you know, your fingers see better than your eyes do, so you can really tell when those cherries are ripe, underripe, if they got worms, because, you know, we are all organic here at Sherry's Cherry.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Organic. So, okay. And your fingers see better than your eyes. That's got to be a UP thing. I don't know if I've ever heard that done. But all right. Okay, here we
He's
are.
He's a real salt of the earth fella.
This is a beautiful sign outside, and let's go through the front
And
door.
Here we are in the bakery area. Oh. Again, just still a small operation. Yeah, you smell that?
Folks, I wish you had some smell-o-vision. Man, this smells good.
It's beautiful. It's wholesome. Mm. It's all organic. Sherry's Cherries. That's right.
What do we got? We got donuts here.
Yep, we got cherry donuts. Yeah. We're gonna try to break out a little bit more into maybe some other fruits eventually, but it's all so wholesomely cherry right now.
No, and there's nothing that says Michigan more than cherry.
Nothing
I love it,
more
cherry.
Than cherry.
So what's your favorite thing here? What do we got here at the?
Well, I'm partial to pie. I love our cherry pie, and right here we actually have mini pies, mini Sherry's Cherries mini pies.
Those are beautiful. Look at that lattice work. Do you do that yourself?
My mother does these. Yes.
Is that her?
Yes.
Behind the camera.
Hi, Mom. Yep, that's Tammy there. She
smells gorgeous, Tammy. Thank you so much.
Yep, and she's the one in charge of all of this here at the bakery because this is what her job used to be when my grandfather was in charge. She was the one that started the bakery. She started doing pies and baked goods out at the stand at the farm. And she's still in charge of it. So whoever comes up next with her is going to need to know how to bake. That's probably not going to be me. I'm not much of a cook.
Get your oven mitts on.
Mm-hmm.
I do have myself there a personalized set of oven mitts. Sherry got me them for Christmas last year.
Gorgeous.
They got the little bears on them.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. Well, look, I want to thank you both so much. Well, anything you want to say to the fans before we sign off?
Just thank you so much for having us on today, Errol. Thanks for coming on out to our farm. Please, everybody, go check out Sherry's Cherries. We are going to be national, so get in on the ground floor while you can,
that's
folks.
Right. So, you know, come on up here to Traverse City or stop by your local Myers. And grab some Sherry's Cherries.
Come on by the Traverse City Cherry Festival. We've got a big stand every single year. Come out and represent.
All right. Thank you so much for being on the show. You too. I expect an invitation to the wedding.
Oh, absolutely.
I'll bring some cherries. This has been Trolling the Mitten.
Oh, Buck is so cute. You should take him out to the cherry shed.
That's all for today, you for scoopers. Remember, you can listen to this and every one of our episodes on lccconnect.org, plus all your major streaming platforms. Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you had as much fun as we did. And until next time, if you seek a pleasant peninsula, look about you.
Keep connected with LCC Connect at lccconnect.org.
LCC Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Engaged learning and academic success is a priority at Lansing Community College. To help students navigate their educational career, LCC has created a proactive approach to learning and providing students with several academic support services. To find out what's available, visit lcc.edu/services.
I want to tell you a secret everyone should know.
Are you listening?
When it comes to your body,
the greatest gift you can give yourself
is knowing your HIV status.
Knowing your status allows you to live your life
and stay healthy.
So follow my lead.
I'm doing it.
I'm doing it.
I'm doing it.
And make HIV testing a part of your routine.
It's fast, free, and confidential.
Get tested today. You'll be glad you did.
Visit cdc.gov/doing it.
Michigan residents age 25 or older may qualify for Michigan Reconnect, a program providing free or reduced tuition to students who have not earned a prior college degree. Reconnect students are responsible for books and fees. Visit lcc.edu/reconnect for more information.
LCC.
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
This is Bob Myers from the Historical Society of Michigan with a Michigan History Moment. It was 1942, and 8 female college students faced a dilemma. The women were entering their senior year. They were home economics students at Michigan State Normal College, today's Eastern Michigan University. Upon graduating, they would become certified teachers, able to pass along the skills they had learned in cooking, cleaning, and budgeting to home ec high school students. First, however, they had to spend their senior year in a practice house. As the name implied, they would use their time in the practice house to make practical use of the skills they had learned. One of those eight students was African American. Faculty and administrators agreed that they could not permit an African American student to live in the practice house with her Euro-American counterparts. She would have to live elsewhere. Without the experience gained by living in the practice house, she could not qualify for a teaching certificate from the state of Michigan. Without a teaching certificate, her college diploma would be worthless. The other seven women protested. Their classmate had taken the same courses as they did and was just as qualified. The college remained unmoved. The women could move into the practice house without their classmate, or they could forfeit their teaching certificates. The students decided to hold out, but they were fearful that they had just thrown away the 3 years that they had spent in the classroom. The college faculty and administrators blinked first. It occurred to them that it would be less embarrassing for the college to have an integrated practice house than to have no graduates from the home economics department. They offered the seniors a compromise. If the single African American student would live on the third floor, separate from her classmates, she could live in the practice house. The Euro-American students agreed. All eight young women moved into the practice house, seven on the second floor and one on the third floor. Immediately thereafter, two of the women moved up to the third floor to join their colleague. On graduation day in 1943, all eight seniors received their diplomas and shortly thereafter got their teaching certificates from the state of Michigan. They went on to successful teaching careers. The college had inadvertently taught them that lessons in integrity often come from outside the classroom. This Michigan History Moment was brought to you by MichiganHistoryMagazine.org.
Connecting you with Lansing Community College, this is LCC Connect.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
The Lansing Community College Massage Clinic is open to the public and provides an opportunity for the students of the massage program to gain valuable client experience. Relaxation massages and therapeutic massages are both available at a nominal fee. Visit lcc.edu/massage for more information.
If you love them enough to turn off your music and pretend like their music is your music.
Ah, this is mommy's jam.
Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're in the right car seat.
Let's play it again.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
The Lansing Community College Foundation provides scholarships that make education possible, change students' lives, and uplift our community. Students may apply for scholarships November 1st through January 31st. Learn more at lcc.edu/scholarships.
LCC.
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
You are listening to Written in the Stars, Books and Beyond, where hosts from the LCC Library sit down with writers, publishers, entrepreneurs, and literary enthusiasts of all types. Join us as we explore the very heart of the written word.
Hello, and welcome to Written in the Stars. My name is John Saleji. With me today is my co-host, Amy Ewald.
Hi, everybody.
Today we are talking about art, illustrations, and book design. Our guest is Lucy Sink.
Hello.
Hi. Lucy is an artist with extensive experience who has worked as an artist for large companies and as a freelance artist. She has exhibited work at galleries, at science fiction conventions, at Renaissance fairs, and art fairs kind of all across the country. She published illustrations and book covers in the U.S. and Europe. In addition to her art, she also completed a master's degree in theology from Loyola University in New Orleans, using it to explore her interest in science and faith, feminine spirituality, and fantasy sci-fi as modern myth. So thank you for being here, Lucy.
I'm happy to be here.
So our podcast kind of really focusing on books. We were going to jump right into talking about kind of your work on books. So what is it like, especially illustrating a book cover?
It can be a very varied experience. And most of my career, I was working with publishers. And it's kind of funny. They don't want you to communicate with the author much. From the publisher's point of view, the book cover is an advertisement. So they don't encourage you to read much of the book. That can cause problems. If you ever talk to authors about this, you find out, oh, that doesn't look anything like my character, or you gave away the whole surprise ending of the book. Oh. That didn't happen to me personally, but I talked with Andre Norton once, and she worked very hard on a surprise ending, only to have it revealed.
So
through the book cover.
Maybe you don't know this, but in that case, did the illustrator just guess what was going to happen, or did they have too much knowledge?
The publisher probably gave them a specific scene that publisher thought would make a good cover, irregardless of what the author might have wanted to do.
So was that the kind of direction that you got from the publisher? Is they'd give you a specific scene or some little information?
For commissioned work, very often, if we are lucky, we might be able to read the book ahead of time. Many of my book covers, actually, the publisher liked a piece I had already done that was inspired by the genre. I mentioned Andre Norton already. She inspired me to do, and many other authors, a series of female wizards doing magic, different portraits of these fantasy characters. So when Tor Books saw one of my illustrations, one of my original paintings, they thought it would be perfect for an anthology of Andre Norton books called Wizards Worlds, which were all about female wizards. So I really lucked out. I just got paid the licensing fee, and I didn't have to deal with the grind of
developing something from scratch, right?
From scratch, yes. Yeah. I've actually done several short story illustrations for magazines, especially Aboriginal science fiction, where I did get to read the short story. And then they had me do like two or three color illustrations throughout the magazine for it.
Oh, that's cool.
So I worked with a little art direction there. I had one particular instance where I did not like the characters in the story. And they all died at the end, and they deserved what they got. So I ended up focusing on their abilities and making almost a surrealistic image, which was really worked out because I got an agent that showed my work to European publishers, non-English speaking publishers. And one of them loved one of the illustrations and put it on the cover, an anthology of super horror. I don't do horror, but and I can't read the book because it's in German.
So what do you do in that situation? Do you just
give me a copy of the cover, and it goes in my resume, and I take my check and cash it.
So you mentioned kind of, I don't know if you would call it a subgenre, that of Aboriginal fantasy or sci-fi. What does that kind of entail, and what is that I guess, kind of about?
Well, that was a specific name of a specific magazine.
Okay.
And I think their idea is the Aboriginals would be the natives of different planets.
Okay.
So from their point of view, they're the main character.
Okay. That was very different than what I was seeing in my head for a title of that. So that is good to know. The next question I kind of have is, obviously, we've been talking a lot about sci-fi and fantasy so far, and that was like a lot of your illustrations are part of that. So what kind of drew you to create sci-fi and fantasy art?
When I was 12, Star Trek came out. Boy, am I dating myself. I got an instant crush on Mr. Spock. I was living in White Cloud, Michigan at the time, a very small town. I think I read every single science fiction book their library had. I just fell in love with science fiction. And then my senior year, the newspaper came out with a double spread about Tolkien, the Lord of the Rings. It was an anniversary. So that got me into fantasy. And when I really got going on my career, it was in the 80s, which we now look back on as the golden age of the science fiction convention. And I had gotten a job at Hallmark Cards, but I was just doing production art. Very technical work that needs a very fine hand, but boring as all get out. And when I realized I might be able to make a living doing what I loved, doing science fiction art, I said goodbye to corporate life and started freelancing.
So did you just kind of draw on your own then and have your own sketchbooks?
Oh, yes.
What's your process for that?
Well, I've been drawing my whole life and painting. Mm. And I've actually taken classes with individual artists for portraiture and still life to increase my skills, which I then applied to doing illustration work. Growing up in Michigan, I didn't have a chance to get the kind of education you might have in New York or someplace like that. But I adapted all the little bits and pieces of my education and experience and put them together. One of the key parts for my career in Kansas City was that we had one of the largest Renaissance festivals. Mm. And through the clubs and through the Renaissance festivals, I had many, many friends who wore costumes. Mm. I would invite them to my home where I'd set up a little photography studio. I also had experience in photography. And they would wear their costumes and I would pose them. And indeed, that was like where my Women Wizards series came from, where women wearing costumes, posing for me. I had a whole setup. And then I would use the photography as a reference and sketch it all out and add fantasy elements.
Wow, that's really interesting. You mentioned your education in that, and I did see in on your website that you had attended some different community colleges.
Yes. So,
as a community college chair at LCC, tell us a little bit about your experience with, you know, LCC. In fact, you even mentioned earlier that you had attended. So tell us a little bit about your experience specifically with community colleges and then your kind of your development as an artist.
Well, I love community colleges. After my experience as a four-year degree, which I loved, but which was not practical in any way, I love that you can, for much more affordable tuition, get very practical learning at a community college that can actually be used for your career. And so Lansing Community College, combined with my fine arts experience, landed me the job at Hallmark Cards. And then later on, much later on, I wanted to get into Photoshop and some of the newer things. I realized that was the direction that the whole industry is going in. So again, I attended community colleges where I was living, one in Champaign, Illinois, another in Grand Rapids. I moved a lot. I don't know if I made it back to LCC or not. But on those occasions, I was focusing on Photoshop, Illustrator, and checking out other things to see if they were a possibility. I even got my toes wet trying some animation. But that was a little over my head. And I came to realize that I couldn't compete with young people who grew up with computers. But I now look on Photoshop as another medium. I love oils, I love acrylics, and I love Photoshop. And it's a great tool now doing illustrations where I can combine elements from paintings I've already done to create a whole new image that will be good for a book cover.
That's so cool. It's like you never quit really learning, right? And experimenting. And
I love learning and experimenting.
Yeah, and growing, right? That's
right.
When we learn, we grow and we learn new things. And that.
Exactly.
That's
yes.
Really cool.
You had also mentioned talking about the 1980s and the golden age of sci-fi conventions. I saw from your website in your information, you've exhibited art at a bunch of science fiction conventions. Mm-hmm. How did you kind of get involved in going to conventions?
Well, my very first two conventions were some of the first Star Trek conventions.
Okay.
I rode the bus with my schoolmates from Siena Heights to a convention in downtown Detroit. I met Chekhov.
And
Sulu. And I had little drawings I did at pen and ink of the characters, and they sold, and I got the bug. But then it was quite a while before I found another one at another community college when I moved to Kansas City. One of the largest suburbs is Johnson County, and they have a community college, and they sponsored a literary science fiction convention where I got to meet authors and I exhibited my art and it sold. And then I went to other conventions regionally and belonged to a science fiction club. So we were all checking all this stuff out and realized I could do this full time.
Yeah.
Ooh.
the one that really stood out to me is you mentioned Worldcon when it was in Chicago and you were able to display there. And the reason I know about that is because of the Hugo Awards, which is book awards for sci-fi. What was it like being able to be at that convention and to have your art there at that convention?
It's amazing. A little overwhelming. I was very fortunate. Some of the Golden Age illustrators, Frank Kelly Fries, is a very well-known illustrator from the Golden Age. And he was great about giving advice to young starting up illustrators. And we'd yank him all over the art show to come critique our work. So I got to meet big names, Frank Frazetta and a few other ones. But
so my follow-up question would be, what advice was he able to give? And was there anything you would pass along to our listeners and other folks that he told you?
Oh, it's been a while.
Understandable.
Trying to think of something specific
right.
Also that the industry has changed so much.
I think it's not so much like the sci-fi conventions anymore as it's more of the Comic-Con.
Yeah. The conventions, very few of them are still run by fans. Mm. They're for profit now. I can't even afford to attend them like I used to. It's changed so much.
Right. Do you have to have pay some type of fee to have a table?
You have to pay a substantial
fee
to get in, to have a table. Some of these don't even have art shows. They're all geared only for the media. Like the comics and the
superhero movies.
Exactly. Yeah. They're not interested in artists who might be exhibiting their own work or trying to sell their own work.
Yeah.
It's unfortunately.
It is unfortunate. Yeah. Because it sounds like some of these conventions were kind of an entry for you into the industry.
Well, back then, science fiction was very much an outlier. It was not mainstream. If you wanted to meet other fans, this is where you had to go. And if you wanted to meet professionals like Frank Kelly Freeze, like published artists and writers and the publishers themselves, they were very, you could meet them at these conventions. They actually talked to you one-on-one. You could hobnob with them. They would give panels. And I've been on panels myself giving advice to others how to get published or how to come up with ideas.
Yeah.
And honestly, for me, because I've had a few opportunities like that to meet authors at conventions or other, that was kind of part of my idea for the show, right? Is like to have a podcast where we can have those kinds of conversations that, you know, you might have previously had at conventions in that as well. So it's such a helpful thing to do.
Yes.
To change course a little bit here, I noticed on your website, you've also done some murals, and you have a mural at a natural history museum. And tell us a little bit about what it's like to create a piece of art like that.
I had been freelancing as a science fiction artist for about 12 years, was getting burnt out and was looking more widely afield when I discovered an industry for painting murals and illustrations for natural history museums and nature centers. Now, we didn't work for just one museum. Mm-hmm. The museums don't really want you to know this. They don't do most of the work themselves. So I was so excited when I discovered this company, and it mentioned that we did not need to know computers. Yay. Because though I was starting to learn, didn't know enough. And that it was mural work for backgrounds, for dioramas at the nature centers and in museums. And all of a sudden, I'm looking at this going, oh, dinosaurs. I'll get to paint dinosaurs. And indeed, there's a museum up in Rochester, Illinois, the Burpee Museum. We don't think it's related to the seeds at
okay.
all. But they had gotten their hands on a young T-Rex skeleton, and they wanted a huge mural of a T-Rex. I got to do the mural. 25 feet tall, 40 feet long, of a T-Rex attacking some other dinosaurs and some triceratops in the background saying, okay, kids, out of the pool. We're out of here. I must have been a pain in the butt to work with right that time, because I was like a 12-year-old for 9 months working on that painting. So that's one of my pride and joys. And you can at least see a reproduction of it still at that museum if you were to go there. That was for Chase Studios.
You said it took 9 months to...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how do you start? Is that something you do it on paper first?
Oh,
and
yes.
Then, but the scale, and how would you...
Well, you need to really work on the anatomy based on the skeletal structures. Mm-hmm. There's a whole approval process. We know ahead of time the dimensions. So once you've, most of the work, that 9 months, is just planning it all out. Which species? And we were just finding out that some dinosaurs may have had feathers. Mm-hmm. So I inserted a velociraptor with some feathers on him. Then we do something called gridding it out. It's much too big to project your drawings up. But you make a grid with chalk for 2-foot squares over the entire thing. And then each square, it could be the equivalent, say, of a 1-inch square on your drawing. Mm-hmm. So then since it's gridded, you're doing it little piece by piece to fit the square, making sure the lines fit correctly in each square so that when you're all done at full size, you've drawn it in the same proportions it was in your drawing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just always fascinated by how you go from, you know, a piece of paper or, you know, small scale to such a large scale installation.
When it's that,
like
that big, a lot of artists would use projectors, mm-hmm. but it's too big. You can't.
Yeah.
And you don't want distortions. So the gridding it out makes sure it stays pretty accurate.
Yeah, oh, when you were talking about projectors, I thought, oh, you probably don't want to do that because of distortion. But
distortions, yeah.
That makes sense.
And one interesting thing is oils were always my favorite medium uh-huh. before. Oils are not the right medium for this. And I was never a big fan of airbrush. But we used airbrush for like clouds.
Mm.
And we even use those big airless sprayers like you can spray paint a house with
uh-huh.
to get the background sky colors in.
Uh-huh.
So you really would speed it up. And uh-huh. we'd use like latex paint to block in the basic shapes and then change to acrylic with brushes for the detail work.
So was there like a team that you worked with that
yes.
did like that kind of thing? And
on this particular mural, I'd say I did 90% of
oh,
the
wow.
work myself.
Okay.
Well, we have a whole team like for setting up,
okay.
building.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The mural was actually too high for the warehouse we used as a studio.
Oh.
So we had it set it up so we could do the sky first, and I had to very carefully compose it so nothing important would be in like the top third, because then we lifted the whole canvas up, flipped the top third over, and rehung the rest of it
okay.
on stretchers so that I could finish painting.
Wow.
That sounds like a process. Yeah.
And see then why it took 9 months. Yeah.
Right. And then there's a whole team to take it down and then go to the museum and set it all up, put
right.
everything up.
Yeah. Wow. That's incredible. that is a moment, something to be proud of for
oh,
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll have to look for it.
And
do they have any like images of that online?
If you Google my
okay.
name, it'll come up.
All right. I'm going to do that. I'm going to check that out.
I refer to that as the Cretaceous mural.
Oh.
Okay.
In case you want to look it up.
All right.
Okay. That is cool. So I did notice, talking a little bit more about your work, that you have a series that you're calling Rejoicing in Our Differences.
Yes.
And you called it Modern Americana. And I love that term. So tell us a little bit about your thoughts and feelings behind that series and what it represents and what direction you're headed in with that.
Well, it's kind of a funny story. I love doing jigsaw puzzles. And I really got into them like so many people. And there was a few particular ones that were scenes of Americana, which I really enjoyed doing it. But I did by the same artist, three or four of them, and I suddenly realized a pattern. They're all white people. And I did research into Americana and was rather alarmed to find this very much a white person term. Mm. It's a cozy America is seen by white people only.
Mm.
And it occurred to me, how about, could we do a modern Americana that's of our time period, but shows the wonderful diversity of America in a warm and friendly way, like classic Americana, but there are people of all colors and religions. And how about some disabled people? Just hanging out. Yeah. So like I did one of an art fair, again, with all different races. I've got a person in a wheelchair, two women who look like they're animatedly talking. They're actually speaking in sign language.
Oh,
they're a deaf,
okay.
deaf
yeah.
friends.
Yeah.
I have another one called Farmer's Market, and there's a man and a woman, and the man has a guide dog with him. But everyone is enjoying themselves. And these are based on my own experiences. I lived in Oak Park, Illinois for a while. And one night after work, I was working as an illustrator at a company there. I came home at twilight on Halloween. And the streets were literally filled with what seemed like hundreds of children of every race. just filled with them. And it was such a delightful experience that inspired my painting, Halloween in Oak Park.
Yeah, they're beautiful paintings that you have listed on your website. And I was so impressed. And the feeling that you get from them, too, of that feeling of, yes, just seeing diverse faces and people. And that is our modern day America, isn't it? Like,
well,
so many.
It's under threat, and there's a lot of fear and anger. And that's kind of the current popular way to do protest pieces, and I honor those, but I wanted to do something that evoked, what are we searching for? What are we fighting for? Mm-hmm. Our values, our joy, our peaceful coexistence with each other as America.
Yeah,
that's a wonderful, that wonderful is, thing, and great.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I would encourage our listeners to take a look at those paintings, because they really are beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
There's a good chance they're going to be exhibited later this year. I'm still working out the details, but
wonderful.
I do announce things like that on Facebook.
So. Okay.
And we're kind of talking about it now. Where can folks learn more about your work and where you might be exhibiting it?
I do have a website,
right.
Lucy Sink Fantasy Art, and a presence on Facebook. I also belong to the Mid-Michigan Art Guild, a local art group that exhibits at many places. Also, the Lansing Women Artists Collective. We have exhibits right now at the Neighborhood Empowerment Center, Bestsellers in Mason, and the Riverwalk Theater. I also have a series of spacescapes that I am exhibiting at Laura's Gallery in Realtown right now.
Yeah, I did notice that on your website, too, some of the really interesting, kind of going back to your sci-fi days a little bit there.
I am, and I'm incorporating them, getting back to doing illustrations. I know a publisher, Weird Sisters Publishing, is putting out a bunch of science fiction books for some women authors that I've done some covers for, but also they're going to reissue some books by the science fiction author Warren Norwood, who was very well known in the 90s and has since died. Well, I am using my abilities, my spacescapes. I'm using Photoshop to mix and match planets with backgrounds, change the backgrounds to fit the right format for the books. And if all goes well, they're going to be publishing several of Warren Norwood's books with my covers and illustrations in it. And what's really fascinating is that I'm also combining the work of a few other artists who will be credited, because I can paint people and dinosaurs and planets and stars, but I am not really very good with spaceships.
Oh.
So using Photoshop, we combined another artist, his first name's Chess, his spaceships with my backgrounds to create the illustrations.
That's wonderful. I definitely will be on the lookout for that if those come out and when they come out. So
I love the collaboration there too with others, and
it's exciting.
Mixing of mediums and that too. So how neat.
It's giving me a shot in the arm, a whole new interest in doing published work. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, that's about the time we have today. So thank you, Lucy, very much for being on the show. And could you give your website one more time, please?
Lucy Sink Fantasy Art. And remember, the last name is spelled S-Y-N-K.
Wonderful. Yes. Yeah. Thank you so much for being here. It was wonderful to talk with you.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for listening. And check out Lucy's work. It's wonderful, beautiful, artistic. It's just great. So I would encourage our listeners to check that out. And everything will be linked in our show notes, too, for her website and that. Thanks for being here. And thanks for listening.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Written in the Stars, Books and Beyond. Visit lcc.edu/library to find the titles discussed in this episode. You can find previous episodes of Written in the Stars and other LCC Connect shows at lccconnect.com. In the words of Miguel D. Amuno, I hope, reader, we shall meet again and we shall recognize each other.
This has been LCC Connect Weekly, a presentation of LCC Connect, a podcast network developed by Lansing Community College. Production and sound engineering for LCC Connect Weekly and its podcasts are provided by Dedalian Lowry and Brendan Skipper. Our theme song, Start a New Day, is performed by Samuel Biggs and licensed through DeWolf Music. To hear today's featured podcasts on demand, learn more about the network, become a guest, or explore ways to get involved, visit us anytime at lccconnect.com.
LCC.
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.